You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Darlene Lukowski. Darlene and I talk about secrets, trauma, and letting go of control. It's a heavy topic that actually includes sexual abuse. So this conversation might not be perfect listening if you're in the car picking the kids up from preschool, but there's actually nothing graphic in the conversation. So what I think is helpful and supportive in this conversation with Darlene is her shift after she stopped keeping her secret. In fact, I actually think the transformation is pretty inspiring. So let's get to it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Darlene Lukowski, are you ready for a fun chat today?
I am. Ready than ever.
Yay, I'm happy you're here. All right, I have the same two warm-up questions on every single conversation. I ask everybody what part of the world they call home. So where are you?
I'm in the Charlotte, North Carolina area right now.
Fantastic. And share with us something that you love or enjoy or like about Charlotte.
The thing about Charlotte is that you're fairly close to everything. You're 3 hours to the mountains, 3 hours to the ocean, and it's just a great place to live. And I grew up in Michigan and lived in Chicago, so I'm really glad to be gone from the snow. But this weekend, we got 8 inches of snow, so I really didn't leave it very much.
Goodness, that is a lot of snow. So many people, we're recording this for the audience so that they know we're recording this at the very beginning of February, and so much of the country is getting, you know, severe weather. I'm in the almost tropics, and so we are in the land of falling lizards, frozen lizards. So, and it has been kind of hilarious because they're all over the place, and it's a little colder here than it usually is. But I can't really complain about the cold.
No,
don't worry. All right, so Darlene, what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about you making the decision to release some control in your life, and we're also going to talk about keeping secrets. Does that sound like a fun conversation today?
It absolutely does.
All right,
it'll very be very good. Interesting once you hear my story, I think.
I think so, because I don't actually know. I don't know what the secrets are or what the story is. I'm going to be learning this along with the audience. All right. So you shared the information I do have. You shared that in midlife, which is a super general term. So you were forced to confront the way you were living. And I was curious about how long ago we're talking, to put a time frame in.
Sure.
When did this come up in your life?
So I just turned 60 this month, and I had to confront everything in front of me at 58 years old.
Okay, so just a couple of years ago is when this is
I confronted. Yep, when I confronted the secret, but the trauma happened when I was 7, but I buried it.
Okay, all right. So very good. So that's a piece of the puzzle. I got it. We're going to come back to that. So is there something specific that, you know, made this something that you had to deal with 2 years ago, or was it like a general sort of awakening?
It was very specific. So I don't know how to back into it because it's kind of an incredible story. So my mom passed away in 2021. I had a very deep, dark secret that I'd kept for 50 years, and I vowed my parents were never to know.
So it was when your mom passed away, no longer had to keep the secret.
Exactly. Mom passes away. Dad has dementia.
Oh, so he doesn't know.
Yeah. I get in an argument with the person that caused the trauma. A year later, I get sued over it. And my trauma is now front and center in a court of law in front of 12 jury members.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. That's like a real trial, not like family court with a judge. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
A civil trial. Yeah.
Okay. So let's back up a teeny tiny bit. You mentioned some of this already, but I was thinking when I was writing out the questions that it sounded to me like, to really understand what we were talking about, that it might be helpful to understand like who was in your family and stuff like that. So without getting too personal, share with us what you will, as little or as much as you want to, about your family. So you mentioned that your parents, your mother's deceased, your father has dementia. What else? Siblings? You have at least one sibling, pets, kids, jobs. Tell us what we need to know.
Sure. So in current day, I am married to my second husband. I
Okay.
have three adult children, all in their 20s. I am the youngest of five children. I'm a 60s child. And I guess to talk about my trauma is, unfortunately, at 7 years old, the world betrayed me. And from the ages of 7 to 12, brothers who I was supposed to trust and protect me instead sexually assaulted me from those ages. So I
Okay.
took that trauma, put it in a box, thought I was rid of it, became a very successful career woman, successful mom. But, I had control issues. I had hypervigilance issues. I had perfectionist issues. I had to win at all costs. And it took me until 58 years old to learn everything I did to survive was killing me as an adult.
Okay. All right. And then 58 is when you, so you've been married twice, you have adult kids. And so this is the secret that you kept. I did not know what it was before we started. So we call this is then considered sibling sexual assault, right? SSA.
SSA, or another acronym, is SSTA, sibling sexual trauma and
Okay.
abuse.
Trauma and abuse. I have, you're actually, believe it or not the first conversation I've had about this. I interviewed Jane Epstein, who also wrote a book about her story. And it is something that is, from speaking to Jane, I have had a voyeur's view, like through just our contact. It's not something that people like to particularly talk about or have spoken around them. It's maybe not, it's not what people are looking for, conversation over bingo. And so it takes a lot of strength to bring that up. And that's what I wanted to mention that. All right. So we're going to wind back the calendar, and talk about you not as a kid when this was happening, but how holding the secret and the coping mechanisms that you developed, how they impacted your life as an adult. You told me on the pitch form that you really thought you were being a good adult, or doing a good job at adulting, because you were managing everything and trying not to drop any balls. So tell me more about what it meant in your life. Like, what were the things that you were keeping under control and taking care of? That what were you managing at the time?
Well, I wanted to be successful. I wanted to win at all costs. And I just knew I become a salesperson.
Okay.
And so if you always have to win, it's really good to be in sales. But what was happening is, I'd get into an argument with my husband and I just wouldn't give an inch, And my husband would say, "You're being impossible. You just don't give." Well, to me, if I gave up, if I lost, then I was going to get sexually assaulted.
Okay.
So that's how it was impacting me. Because if you always have to win, my husband became my opponent. My children became my opponents. And I was so uptight and so hypervigilant, keeping this secret. I had two lives. I had the little Darlene who was abused and hurt and betrayed. And I had the over perfectionist adult Darlene that could do no wrong and overachieved and just did everything that I could to be very detailed so that I wouldn't get hurt as an adult.
And were you so then when you were you always like that? Like, were you like that from the time you were an adolescent and able to, be aware of the performance metrics? Like, were you very competitive in high school and college and beyond?
Yeah, it's interesting you ask that because as a child, I learned at a very young age if I was ever alone, then I was going to get assaulted. And so
Okay.
I did everything in my power never to be alone. So
Okay.
I became uber athletic. I joined every single sport a little girl could. I think at one point I was playing seven different sports. I decided to become uber popular because if I was popular, if I had lots of friends and girlfriends, then I would never be home. I would be at parties. I would be among people. I would be safe.
Okay. Yeah, one of the things that I've learned, or one of the things I've picked up, I probably shouldn't say learned because I'm the host, not the expert. One of the things I've picked up in many of these conversations is that these coping mechanisms that we design when we're children, they do very much seem to me like they start in, strategies to create that feeling of safety. So what I'm hearing you say is that home wasn't safe, being alone wasn't safe. And so, from a very early age, you were doing whatever you could to not be home, and specifically not be home or not be alone, to be surrounded by people and to be out of the house. And so, then how did that work out when it became you making your own home? And so, instead of it being your parents' house, living with your siblings, you were forming your own family. How did it shift?
Well, I just became overprotective of my children. Now that the truth has come out, even one of my sons was like, "Why didn't you tell us sooner, Mom? Why didn't you let the secret out of the box?" Because now that we know, now that we've told us, we get you. We understand why you were in our business all the time, why you're so overprotective of us. And so that's a lot of what I also had to let go of. I had to let go of controlling every single thing, every single second around me. And by doing so, I've had such a better relationship with my children. They're like, "Mom, you're a totally different person. Like, this is awesome. I mean, we hate that this happened to you." And, they were very supportive, but they were also very sad to think that I had to keep the secret. And I think that's something for your listeners. Like, we all have secrets. We all have some sort of trauma. We just have to figure out, like, whatever we're keeping inside in that secret in that box, let it go, because your life will change dramatically when you open up and trust people that they've got you.
Yeah. So I want to ask you about keeping this secret, because you said today, right, after all of this is unraveled, that you know that what you were afraid of was being reassaulted. But I'm curious whether or not you were aware of that exact thing, or was it just a general underlying fear? Like, from the time you were like 12 years old, were you directly afraid of something very specific happening to you, or was it just a very heightened sense of overwhelming fear?
I was deathly afraid of getting assaulted and murdered. I mean, I
Okay.
literally was afraid of the dark. I
Okay.
could not go outside. I could not be alone in my house with the curtains wide open because I felt like there were stalkers outside my house.
Okay. Yeah, so very directly, you had a very concrete thing that you were afraid of, and you tied it directly to you had to manage everything and win every contest.
Yes.
Oh, my
And
goodness, is that.
protect myself. Not only protect myself, now I'm a mother. Now I
Yes.
have children. I've got to now protect them from
Yes.
anything. And that became, I don't want to use the word helicopter mom because that's not what I was. It was just more of an overprotective, overbearing mom, constantly on edge.
Yeah. And so you said you have talked a little bit about this. So this impacted your relationship with your husband. It impacted your affected your relationship with your sons. Who else did it? You said it, what you actually said in the application was you said, it you were holding everything so tightly that you drove the people away, that you drove people away from you. So your husband, your sons, did it roll over into like, friends, coworkers, was there, or was it really specific to just the people you were sharing your home with?
Well, for me, when you hold a secret in that dark, that deep, for me, it was shameful.
Yeah.
Here, brothers did this to me. I can't talk about it. I think I'm the only one. And it just became, I'm sorry, I forgot the question, Amy.
So we're talking about the keeping the secret and the way you were very controlling and also very competitive. It impacted some of the relationships in your life. And you mentioned that you would not let go of the arguments with your husband. And you mentioned that this shifted with your sons when you began to release control. But I wondered if it rolled over into some of the other relationships in your life, like girlfriends, coworkers, people on the PTA. Like, did it was it was it every single relationship touched everything, or was it really isolated to the people who are your family?
Thank you for the reminder. So when you have a box of trauma that big, you think you've got it under control. You think you've got it buried. But the problem when you've got a giant secret, the box leaks. And so it did. I had PTSD all my life, but I actually wasn't diagnosed with it until I was 58 years old. I thought my behaviors were normal. I thought everybody was super in control. I thought everybody was a perfectionist, you know? And so I got to tell you, I did have incidents with my girlfriends, but it was my girlfriends who saved me because I couldn't tell my secret to my parents. I couldn't talk to people at church because then, my parents would find out. I had PTSD incidents with my girlfriends, and those times I told them. And I confided in them and I said, this is why I behaved the way that I did. Like I was at a bar one time and some guy touched me in the wrong place. I flipped out and they thought that the guy had put drugs in my drink. That's how bad it was. And so, yes, it bubbled up and bubbled up and it did affect some relationships with my girlfriends. And I, in college, ended up drinking too much and experimenting with drugs and all of that. And thank God I didn't become a drug addict or an alcoholic or a prostitute. I could have, but I didn't. I chose a different path. I chose the perfectionist path.
So those outsized reactions, those are actually a symptom of unresolved trauma. Not always. Sometimes people can just be dramatic. So it's not a 1-to-1 ratio, but that is something that that does show up when we've got something that's not fully processed. And the most famous one that is completely socially acceptable, right, that we know is that when you have a family member pass away and you're overwhelmed with grief, in that first, 6 months to a year when you're really overwhelmed, somebody will cut you off in the grocery store and you'll just explode, just explode. For me, I had to talk to somebody at the bank and I just completely, they had made a mistake. But I was completely impatient with this person. And I distinctly remember apologizing as I was doing it.
I know.
I was like, I know I'm hysterical. I'm very sorry.
Oh my
Also, you need
gosh.
to fix this. You need
Right. It's
to.
so funny you say that because, I mean, even this week, like the old Darlene, my son is graduating from Army this week. My first husband, he is not an organizer. I plan the dinners, like I do the reservations ahead of time, a month ahead of time. Normally, I would flip out. What? You can't make a reservation? You can't make plans a month ahead of time? Well, how dare you? Why not? Why can't you do this? Well, now that I've been able to just release all of the trauma, all of the pain, I'm kind of like, who cares if I have a dinner reservation a month ahead of time? And he
Okay.
was texting me today, and I'm like, fine, you'll take Friday night, I'll take Thursday night. That's how it's different for people when you let go of your secrets and you open up that box.
And the reason I highlighted that is because I think it's very hard to see sometimes the way things are showing up for ourselves. Whether it's we have spinach in our own teeth and we're not looking in the mirror, or whether we're reacting in a way that is a clue, and that is a clue. So you had some very supportive relationships then, is what this is, and they stuck with you when it bubbled up and when it was scary. And so is something so it, but their close connections were challenging because you were keeping the secret and you weren't able to have that. Would you say that close connection was and is something that it's actually very important to you, or were you like kind of almost avoiding close connection on some level because you knew you had the secret?
Oh man, it's kind of like a two-edged sword.
Okay.
Close connections were critically important to me. My girlfriends meant everything to me, but because I was traumatized at such a young age, I honestly don't think I learned what love really is or was until my late 50s. Again, I think you described it really well, Amy, like I was so naive of who I was and who I'd become. It was almost like I had this wall or the shell. And it really took the lawsuit and being on the stand and that much confrontation for me to look at myself and go, wait a minute. And I actually had a PTSD moment with my daughter. And that was a game changer. Like I ended up hitting her in the head because I thought she was my rapist brother.
Oh my
And it was my
goodness.
daughter. And she even said to me, Mom, you need more help or I can't be in your life anymore. And that was a huge turning point for me.
And was that during the trial or it was before?
It was, well, so the trial went on for 2 years. You know, I get
Okay.
sued in 2022. We don't go on the stand until January 29th, 2024. So this
Okay.
PTSD incident happened in 2023 because I'm reliving, I'm having nightmares all over again. And so when I realized, oh my God, I did this to my own child, I've got to change. And
That
that's when
must
I
have been a
started.
very hard moment.
It was. I'm still, I don't want to tear up, but I'm still, you know.
Especially if you, I won't pick at that scab very much because that must have been very, very hard. But so let's so your mom passes away. Your father has dementia. You at this point, how often were you thinking about this, like top of mind, what had happened to you as a child, like right when your mom passes away? Like, were you still thinking about a lot and aggressively keeping the secret, or had you settled into sort of a, a state of suppression? Like, my normal is that this is I'm keeping this secret and something, and then you decided to face it.
Well,
How did you go
it
from
was
that
all
to the lawsuit
suppressed.
is really kind of
Right,
the, okay.
So it was all suppressed.
Okay.
It was all little Darlene's in a box. She'll be fine. She bubbles up every now and then. But as long as I keep that secret buried, I don't have to deal with it. And then I had adult Darlene over here. But I think, Amy, subconsciously, I don't think it's a coincidence. My mom passes away February. I get in a huge fight with one of the brothers who abused me 3 months later. And I say, look, you need to stop treating me the way that you do, or I could destroy your life if you want me to. I'd been trying to get him to pick up the phone. He wouldn't pick up the phone. And I called him a rapist in the text. I had had enough. Little 7-year-old Darlene came out and he told me to go for it. And
Wow.
so,
Oh, and that's how it happened.
yep. So then we got in a text shouting incident, which isn't pretty. It's in the book. It's not pretty at all. But then I actually afterwards wrote an adult Darlene email saying, this is what happened. Here are the facts. Here are the details. I will forgive you, Don, if you just say you're sorry. And instead of getting an apology, I got handed a lawsuit.
And I'm going to guess that the lawsuit was keep your mouth shut. This never happened. Stop saying fake things
Absolutely.
about me. Okay. So, and all right. So, at what point, at this point, when you it begins to resurface because you've kept it submerged, and do you go on, do you begin to get, does somebody tell you, like, you go to a doctor and somebody says, hey, by the way, you have PTSD? Like, is that, like, is that how this happens?
I mean, I've been in therapy for 20 years already,
Now, did you tell
non-traditional.
the therapist about this, or did you keep them out of the loop?
No, I told girlfriends and I told therapists.
Okay. All
I've
right.
been going to treatment for this since 2005. I tried when I was in college at Michigan State, but in the 80s, it was all old men doctors who just wanted to push drugs on me, and that I'd already had enough drugs in college. I didn't need more medication. So I had been going to therapy, and it wasn't enough therapy. And so when the trial started, everything came pouring back as if I was 7 years old again. The nightmares, the fears, the drama, the control. I mean, I am so shocked I didn't lose my family during those 2 years of getting ready for the trial. I'm very fortunate. Then I did start doing some alternative. I did EFT tapping
Okay.
because it was a doctor who said, you know what? You have PTSD. You might not have known it, but you do. And I've
And was
done.
it the first time somebody had said it to you?
I was 58 when I was told by a doctor, you've got PTSD. And I'm like, I don't even know what that is. What do you mean? Because I thought my behavior was normal. I think a lot of women who are over perfectionists and controlling, I think we feel like our behavior is normal.
Well, I think that normal for me is like a moving target, right? So like when, whatever you're used to, whatever you're acclimated to, there's obviously a limit to this where there's things that people are like, no, this is clearly not normal. But in some houses, you'll take your shoes off before you go in. Other houses you don't. And we've all had that experience where you walk into somebody's house and you're like, how in the world do you live this way? Or the opposite, which is like, oh wow, well, how do we live this way? It's so different, but you don't notice it until you see the comparison. And so it doesn't surprise me. Like everybody thinks they're a good driver until somebody tells them, hey, by the way, you're
You really
not.
are. Yes. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Who's to define what normal is, Amy?
Right. And so, but it's, and so, but the perfectionist, I can really see, it makes sense that you would be like, of course I'm doing it wrong. Of course I should have known earlier. What are you talking about? I should have figured it out
That's
on my
right.
own, but you didn't know. And so you did some EFT tapping, and did it help?
It did. It did. It really helped me understand that the behaviors that I was doing didn't matter anymore. And the EFT tapping helped me take away the focus on him, my abuser, and turn the focus instead on me. What I need to be fulfilled, what I need to be whole. And I was able to reject anything that didn't serve me anymore.
Very cool. All right. And so I'll describe EFT and you can tell me if I get it right or wrong. So EFT is a modality which combines physical percussion on your own body and some, what are they called? Meridian points. Is that what they call
Yeah,
the
your
meridian
forehead, your,
points?
yeah.
Combined with a sequence of self-directed statements that acknowledges your how you feel and you walk through changing it for what you want. So there's a very famous sequence, which is that even though XYZ is happening, I still love and completely accept myself, or I want to feel better, or whatever it is that you do. So that's what EFT is. So people can then Google it. There are a variety of people. It's, one of the things that's really neat about EFT is it's once somebody teaches it to you, you can kind of run with it on your own. You don't necessarily, you can find people to help you with it, or you can do it yourself, like in the closet at night with, just on your own. So I think that, so that's wonderful that that works. And you mentioned that this trial, so you it doesn't sound like a super stable, super loving family relationship that you go through a full, like litigious 2 year trial prep with a jury. That's like a major deal. What was Thanksgiving like for you guys? Like, did not with your siblings, I'm guessing.
That's right. I mean, I don't have any relationship with my two older brothers who abused me anymore.
Okay.
Those ties severed that May of 2021 with the explosion text. I did call one of them, though, the next morning, and I just said, David, did you really do this to me? Like, come on, I'm not going crazy. Don's out there telling everybody I've had a nervous breakdown, that I'm a pathological liar. Come on. Did this really happen? And he said, yes, I'm sorry. He gave me the acknowledgement that I needed. The other brother, I just think he is in such denial. And just, I think once he told his wife and showed his wife the text messages, he had to keep lying, and he kept lying. I'm actually shocked he didn't try and settle this out of court, because I had
Right.
So I had six girlfriends who testified for me and the therapist.
Wow. Oh my goodness. And so there's five of you. There's three. Do you have a relationship with the other two siblings?
So my sister passed away sadly of cancer in 2008. So my one brother, who's 2.5 years older than me, who didn't hurt me, he and I have a relationship still. And then Don and Dave, the two that hurt me, are off doing their own thing. So
that is a really disruptive event in your family. I'm very sorry that it's a hard, all of this is unpleasant. And I wish I had better words, but the ones I have are just acknowledging, you know, how hard it is and that you went through it. But on the flip side of that, you know, I'm impressed at a couple of things. The strength to go all the way through with it and not back down and hide from it when somebody brought it public, and to do all those things. And also the strength to, like you said, that you don't think you felt like you knew what it was, what love was, until your mid to late 50s. And I think that that's actually for a lot of people who in a variety of situations, that's actually a very encouraging thing to hear people discover that late in life. Right? Because you have this story of early childhood trauma, which impacted it. Another time that people like feel that way is when they're going through the end of a very long relationship. Like, can I ever rediscover love or affection? I think that you are a more inspirational person than perhaps, like, you know, using Bridgerton as a guide of possibility.
Yeah.
So, all right. So that's the secret. This is what we do. So that, you know, like, So, you've told us the secret. What do you feel about secrets now? Like, you kept this quiet, and let's talk about why you figured out to do that at a young age and why you stuck with it for such a long time. Like, I grew up in a family that also part of it had some secrets. Some of them I totally understand why we kept them secret to these days. Others at 52 years old, I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get it why that was a secret. I don't know why I was told. But why did your brothers tell you not to tell anybody? Like, was there an aggressive message that, like, don't tell anybody? Or was it something that you decided you were like, no, I know I can't tell anybody about this?
It was kind of a combination of both. I mean, after every assault, and luckily there weren't that many, it was about once a year. So I never knew when it was coming. I think that's part of my hypervigilance, always on guard, because I was always felt stalked. But really, my brothers would say, if you tell, you know you're going to destroy the family. If you tell, you know mom is going to be crushed. My parents were very conservative. My mom went to Hope College in Michigan, which is a conservative Christian college. She owned a Christian bookstore. My dad was senior vice president of the biggest, you know, factory in town, the country club family. And here I am, 7, 8, 9 years old, thinking I'm the only one. Like, what's going to happen to me if I tell?
Yeah.
I'm going to be forever known as that little girl who happened to. And I just knew I was going to destroy my family. So I chose to keep the 90% good that I had.
So, and you kept this secret all the way through to when you were protecting your parents' reputation. Do you wish that you had come out earlier with it, now that it's all said and done and you're on the other side?
You know, I don't know if going back to the 70s and the culture that it was, I don't know if I would have been brave enough to, because I still think I would have been the only one. But that's part of the reason of my purpose now, Amy, is because I don't want little boys and girls to know that they can't tell. I want parents, I want your listeners to go have a conversation with their children tomorrow to say, we have to think about the dangers in your own home. You know, let's run, yell, and tell. That's what I'm hoping for. And if I lived in today's era, I wouldn't be an afraid little girl anymore, because SSTA or SSA is common vernacular. You know,
okay. Yeah.
Right now, nobody's talking about it. And here's a crazy statistic about SSTA. Did you know that they believe that One in every 20 children in a classroom is currently getting sexually abused by their older brother or sister.
I did not have that data point, but I think that it's not overly surprising. I think that one of the things, and you lived this, and I have not, so I'm not presenting it, but I think that the deal you made, which was to value your parents' relationship ahead of your life experience, is a bad deal,
It
right?
is.
It's a bad deal. And the power dynamics in the family. So, like, I mean, I think everybody, it's a tough situation because, the adults have the upper hand in power in any family. Like, what they say has a lot of power, and it should. Like, when we tell our kids, don't stick your hand in the fire, right? We want them to listen because it's safe. But when that gets twisted, it's tough. It's very, very tough. So it doesn't surprise me because I do think that people mostly don't bring this stuff public. And I think that most people, even, because going very realistically, and we'll talk about this because it wasn't necessarily your choice to go super public with this story. But once it was public, everybody knows it's out there.
I wasn't backing down. And that very day of the argument, my brother called every family member except for my one brother. So then it did become public. And then I had to tell my children. I mean, I had to be faced with the shame of telling my children. I mean, what mother has to be faced with telling their children about what happened to them like that? That was so traumatic for me. But they were so incredible and so supportive that everything I feared ended up being the exact opposite.
But I think that does not always happen, first of all, but it does happen more often than we might think. And I think that that's a very important part of people having the courage to come out. Not everybody needs to go on a podcast and tell their private stories or, I have a pretty public profile, and there's all kinds of stuff about me and my family that I definitely talk about. But I have also a lot of respect for, knowing the things that you don't want to share, and just that's totally fine. So that's not what I'm saying. But how did this, like, being able to define a secret and separate it from privacy, I think is a really, really strong skill that families are good if they can talk about, right? Like, I think it's very, very helpful because when you keep the secret and you keep it isolated, and you're a walking example of this, you cut yourself off from the support of the people who are closest to you.
And after winning the trial, I mean, it was like, I won. All right, great. This is awesome. Hallelujah. I won both cases. I'm healed. Well, that's not how healing works.
If anybody's looking at you, can see my face goes to, like, I'm like, really? It was like, snap your fingers, you're healed. Like, is that really how you felt? So after it was done, you're not totally healed. You win the trial. You get through that, which is, I'm sure, an enormous thing. But then you have to go through and do some more emotional healing for yourself.
Yeah, it's kind of like going through a death with somebody. There's phases of the emotion. It was like grief. And I just finally figured out that I had to just let go of all the black tar that I had in my soul because I was so angry. How dare he put me on the stand? How dare he make me relive my entire trauma? This is exposed to the world. I was willing to forgive, and I was also planning on taking this to my grave. I know that doesn't sound the greatest, but that was what I wanted. I wanted to bury the box. Well, the box was blown wide open, and then I just had to say, I can't be angry anymore. I have to get rid of the bitterness. I have to get rid of the resentment. And as soon as I said to my soul, get rid of it all. You've got to shed the shame. Forgive yourself. And even if he won't apologize, I had to use my own agency in order to move my life forward. And that's what I've done. And that's when I decided I've got to write a book. I've got to help other people And I gotta tell you, Amy, I mean, a year ago, if I were on your podcast, I'd be bawling. You know, I couldn't get through it, but every time I talk about it, I heal just a little bit more.
Which makes you a much easier person to tell the story, because you're through it. You've really had some time to think about the feelings you had, and do that. And there's definitely there's so much power in that. And I appreciate you taking all the work to do it. When you had the idea, I need to write the book. All right, so this has become very public with your family. So for a long time, it was a private secret. Then it was blasted into the public through a fight and through a court trial, and now everybody in the family knows. But when you decided to write a book about the story, and did you when you tell your husband, "Hey, now I'm going to write a book," what was the feedback from the rest of the people? They were like, when you said, "Really, not only did we live through this, but now I'm going to write a book." How was that received by your crew?
It's interesting. I'm not going to tell you who, but I did have one person say to me, "Are you sure you want to be known as the woman this happened to?" And that really hurt. That kind of was like, "It's okay. I do. I need to." And that's how I'm going to heal. My husband was really supportive. My children were like, "Mom, we love you. You do what you need to do." And even my daughter, when the first time I told her, she's like, "Mom, I hear you, and I'm so sorry what happened to you, but I think I'm hearing the fact that you need to forgive yourself first. You need to give yourself grace, and that is what I've had to do." And that's why I wrote the book. I mean, I hired a ghostwriter to do it because I knew I couldn't do it on my own. And, you
Very
know,
cool.
yeah,
Very
telling my
cool.
story. She ended up being almost like a fourth therapist, you know, pulling out all of the data and the stories. So.
Wow. So it took a year with the ghostwriter to get this ready for publish. But
Yep.
this episode is going to come out at the end of March. Your book is actually coming out at the beginning of April. We're going to wrap this up in just a few seconds with the rapid fire questions. But tell everybody. I'll read the title, and then so the title of the book is "Shattering Silence: A Story of Survival, Justice, and the Power of Telling the Truth." What do you hope will come from the book?
I hope that I help at least one other person not go through what I've gone through. I hope that men and women who were sexually abused as children are not afraid to talk and know that they're not alone.
Yes. And do you, so that I think that's very good. Okay, so when you're listening to this episode, if you're listening right when it comes out, there is a pre-release deal where you can get a discounted copy of the book on Amazon on April 2nd. And so there will be a link for that discounted copy for 99 cents in the show notes, wherever it is that you're watching or listening to the show. The easiest way to get the links is always to be subscribed to the Imperfect Adulting email list, because then at the right time frame, I will zap it right into your email box and you'll have it. If you're listening to it some other time, the book will be available for purchase in all the regular places. So we'll give you all of that. Thank you very much for that very generous offer for the book. Are you ready to wrap this up, Darlene, with the final three questions?
I am.
All right. So, as somebody who's a perfectionist or a recovering perfectionist, do you have a set morning routine? And if so, what is it?
I get up at the crack of dawn. I'm like literally at the crack of dawn before everybody else is awake, 4:30, 5:30 a.m. And I just chill out. I get my cup of coffee. I sit on my back porch. And I just spend time for me before the world starts.
So you sit on your back porch with 8 inches of snow. Is it a four
Well,
season, or is this an indoor
sometimes,
habit?
yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, sometimes it's my back porch. Sometimes it's my living room sofa in front of a fireplace. How's that? You caught me on that
I was just
one.
clarifying. You could have an all season porch. I don't know. You know, very good. All
Yeah.
right. So you wrote a book. Do you also read books? And if so, what's a good book that you've read that you think that people in the audience might also enjoy?
Oh my
And you can
goodness.
include listen to, because I for me, reading and listening to books is all the same.
Yeah, I mean, I have read so many books, but my brain doesn't allow me to remember things. There is a book about the women in Vietnam who were soldiers, and I
Oh,
can't
man.
remember.
The
Do you remember?
nurses?
Yes.
Yeah, I
What was
think
the
it's
title
called
of
The
that book?
Women.
The Women, yes,
Ladies
it
Club
was
Women.
so good. That's one of my favorite.
That is it is a really good book. I
Yeah.
enjoyed that one too. I really, really did. Were you old? So now you're a little bit older than me. Do you remember Vietnam? I don't, okay. So
No,
for
I
me
don't.
either, for me, it was
Yeah.
all like it was all just, learning through literature. All right. Very good. Okay. So you grew up in the Midwest, you live in North Carolina. When you take vacations these days, are you a person who likes to go a long way from home, choose an exotic location, or are you a person who is like, nope, I picked my town, I'm going to stay nearby?
I'm the type of person that wants to go someplace new every single time. There are
Okay.
only two places I've ever gone back to, and that's Italy and Hawaii. Other than that, I'm going someplace brand new.
Fantastic. That's it, Darlene Lukowski. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time, Amy.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.